fingered soldier, choosing your battles. Pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fall, get up, oh-oh, and if you fall, get up, eh-eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh-eh, waka, waka, eh-eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, this time for Africa.
And this is Ross here, bringing you South Africa 2010. Now we've moved on to South Africa 2010 in the Backpass World Cup Countdown Show. So, Ross here alone. I know my co-host Kel was excited to be part of this show, but unfortunately, he cannot be part of this show because he's got some Deepavali or Diwali visiting to go for. So anyways, as I've mentioned in my previous episode, 2006, in this era, not a very good era for me personally, because I was transitioning into adulting and, you know, career wasn't starting off, relationship problems. So that was me, my personal life. And offhand, I can't even tell you how old I was in 2010, because, you know, once I left school, I just lost track on how old I was. So doing the calculations now live while I speak to you, I will tell you that I was 26 years old when this World Cup took place. So 26 years old when South Africa 2010 took place. Of course, this World Cup is also special and memorable for one reason. One of the many reasons would also be its theme song by Shakira, Waka Waka. It's one of the most popular World Cup songs, World Cup anthem songs. I think the trend probably started with Ricky Martin in 1998. With Cup of Life, and this one is the next most popular or equally as popular when it comes to World Cup songs. So on this show, we had some guests lined up, but unfortunately couldn't make it. So we've got others as well on the show. First of all, let me introduce to you my guest from Malaysia, Mr. GJ Kumar. Just waiting for him to enter. And so, yes, here you are. My first guest of today, for today, Mr. GJ Kumar. He's been one of our most active contributors on our Facebook page. And thank you a lot for your contributions, bro. And nice to have you on the show. You volunteered to be on this show and here you are. So thanks for taking the time out to be here. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm just excited. First time I'm doing anything like this. I've watched your podcast, a few of them in preparation for this. But, you know, I've always had my views and I always wanted to share my thoughts
on the
platform about football. And I thought you'd have to be a former player or something to do that. So from a fan's perspective, I guess, you know, I'm just very happy to be here.
All right. Okay. So returning for the second time on our World Cup Countdown show and third time overall is our good friend, also from Malaysia, Steven John from the Bola Bola Show. Steven.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How you doing, man? Nice. Okay. Nice. Loud and clear. You caught that intro?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good. Good. All right. So, Steven, thanks a lot. Filling in last minute. Appreciate it. For taking the time
football,
to
man.
Come on the show, man.
It's football and it's the World Cup. Anything for it, man.
Okay, okay. And now,
I guess he's a super sub, huh?
Yeah, he's literally the super sub. Another super sub. I've got another super sub now. Let me introduce him. So this guy here is from Singapore. Let's see. Okay. We've got someone from Singapore, Lukman Hakim. He's also part of Tampines Rovers Management Committee and he's part-time Batman as well, it seems.
When you mentioned the name Lukman Hakim, I thought you managed to bring the Lukman Hakim all the way
Lukman
from Belgium. Hakim,
right? Yeah, when he sent me the friend request, I thought it was the Lukman Hakim, but then...
No. We can only wish.
Lukman Hakim.
We can only wish.
Hi, bro. Thanks a lot for coming in as well. You know, This guy is amazing. I'll speak a bit more about him later on, but because he's got an interesting team that he supports in the World Cup. So we'll speak about that later. So first of all, let me just speak to all of you. Lokman, I hope you're doing well anyways.
Yeah, feeling awesome today. How are you?
All right, good, good. You excited?
Oh, I'm feeling terrific right now.
All right, great. Okay, guys, your memories of this World Cup. Don't talk about matches. Don't talk about players. Just pure memories. What do you remember about this tournament? Okay, go with JJ first in this order.
Honestly, this was one of the most, I felt, was one of the most exciting World Cups, one of the most entertaining World Cups, you know, in a way. Not just on the field, but off the field as well. In fact, during the qualifiers already, there was so much of controversy. There was controversy during the tournament and there was controversy after the tournament. All the way up to 2015, the reverberations were felt 5 years later. You know, okay. So I think this is the first World Cup where you actually felt something like that. Like, oh, 2010, like all this happened after that, you know. Yeah.
And
so
how old were you?
13. I'm giving my age. Yeah, 3-0.
Okay.
So I was 26. I was following the games pretty closely, you know. My favorite teams. By the way, I was I don't pick one team. I have favorite teams. Like I follow the Dutch team. I've been following them since 88, since I was 8, you know, because of Van Basten and Gullit and Rijkaard. And the Brazilian team, because my dad's a big Brazilian fan. And that just, you know, went on. 94, I remember 94. I remember watching the 94 World Cup final in the wee hours in the morning. Yeah, so those two. And I also have a kind of, I tend to, whenever there's a neutral game playing, when either of these teams are playing, I tend to support the underdogs.
Underdogs, okay.
I love watching underdogs play.
All right. Yeah. Steven, both of us, for both of us, 1994 is our favorite World Cup, but what are your memories of this World Cup?
Well, similarly to GJ, I also just turned 30 that year. So
okay.
I suppose we were 1980 babies, I suppose.
Yep.
Okay, okay. All right. All right. So, for me, it's not to say one of my most favorite, but it's right up there among the best World Cup. Even though I'm not going to go into detail yet, but my team didn't do as expected. But still, overall, I would say it's a enjoyable World Cup. And one World Cup which I will remember for quite a lot of things, because it was probably the one World Cup where I think I watched many games, not at home, but mostly outside with friends and all that. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Lokman, yourself, you must be the youngest of the lot.
Yes, I am. Hearing the year of the 1980s being thrown out makes me feel very, very young. Yeah, I'm 36.
How old were you, first of all?
I was 14 years old back in the day.
Okay.
And yeah, my first World Cup was in V2. I barely followed the 2002 World Cup as a young kid. But my first World Cup that I followed was in the one hosted by Germany in 2006.
2006, yeah.
But 2010, for me, is my favorite by a long shot. Because of many reasons, and not only on the field, but off the field as well.
All right. What kind of off-the-field reasons? Let me know. Tell me.
Can you find a better theme song for a World Cup since Waka Waka?
Yeah,
I second that. Yeah.
In the intro, I mentioned besides this Waka Waka is of course those of all the rest of us will remember 1998's Cup of Life. That was also a big hit.
Yeah, I've heard
in our time. Yeah, but I mean, as men, of course, Waka Waka, I can understand why it's.
But, you know, I just want to say, I think, you know, Cup of Life was more of an anthem. Waka Waka was more of a party song, you know.
Yeah, party song, fun. Yeah.
If you went to any club, you know, they start playing, everybody, whether you're a football fan or not, everybody will go crazy.
Correct, that's true. Even today. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and if I may add, Waka Waka, it captures the essence of the host nation of the 2010 World Cup. And not only that, it's on top of capturing the essence of Africa, it has a worldwide feel to it. And everyone can relate to it. It's definitely special.
Okay. My co-host Kel, who unfortunately can't be here today, but I know he was chomping at a bit to try to talk about this song as well. So he's lost, well. But anyways, you guys have mentioned it. You talked about the host nation. Let's talk about their performance in the tournament. Hakim, what do you make about their performance of South Africa in the World Cup?
Wow. How do I put this into perspective? It's definitely a dream start for the debutants. I mean, no, sorry, it's for the debutant African hosts. I mean, before that, it's never been hosted by African country. And
yep.
I remember when Bafana really went toe-to-toe with Mexico in the opening game. And that was the first game that the whole entire world was introduced to the Vuvuzela.
Yeah.
It really captures the... there's a certain flavor that they've provided I've not seen before. Yeah, definitely. And the fighting spirit they displayed against Mexico, just beautiful. Which is, there's a secondary layer as to why I feel that any scoreline against Mexico is a good one. It's because of the national team that I support.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we'll speak about your national team later. We're keeping this a bit of a mystery right now, so we'll speak about it later. Steven and GJ, I think you guys would remember South Africa as a stronger team in the 90s, in 1996 and all that era, 98, they qualified for the World Cup as well. Probably at this time going to this World Cup, we would probably think South Africa wouldn't be too strong of a nation compared to what we know in the past, right? So how surprised were you to see their performances in this World Cup?
Steven, go.
Okay, sure. Not surprising at all, because as you can see in the years before the World Cup, especially after 2002, South Africa has performed very poorly on the international stage. In Africa, at the Cup of Nations also, you know, they were very underwhelming. And this was not surprising, because when the moment they got the hosting right, the money that came into the game worked against their favor. Players did not move to Europe. Many of them stayed in South Africa because the money was too good. And it was detrimental to the whole national team's development, because at a point of time, you know, when you look at the other African representatives, like your Nigeria, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, they had top stars playing in Europe, playing in a much better league, playing much better football. So South Africa never had that. Apart from, if I'm not mistaken, can't remember his name, the Everton playmaker at that time.
Steven Pienaar,
yes. Apart from him, I don't think that the rest were anywhere near his level or his credibility as a top players. But credit to them, you know, they did well in their first game as a host. But it wasn't surprisingly that they got knocked out of the first round. Perhaps the most surprising thing is they managed to beat France, which I'm sure we're going to talk about them later.
Yeah. So to just on your point, Steven, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are only 6 members of the squad that played in Europe. 3 of them were in England. So you got Steven Pienaar, Kagishi Dikagoi, and the captain, Aaron Makwena. These were the ones that played in England. GJ, yourself, your impression of the hosts as a footballing nation?
Like what the other two have said, they put up a fantastic fight in the first round. I remember that game very vividly because of the Vuvuzelas more than anything else, because everybody thought something was wrong with the TVs. Yeah, but they put on, I mean, for a team that didn't have too many players playing in Europe and most of them playing in the African leagues. Africa League.
No, they were all in South Africa, actually. All South Africa. In South Africa.
Local race players, and a lot of them were unknowns at the time. So for them to pull up, and don't forget, Mexico at this time were the 2009 Gold Cup champions. So they were expected to do well. They were expected to have a strong squad, you know. So for South Africa to come out and just pull off a draw, that was a big thing, I believe. So everybody was like, all right, they're gonna do something. Maybe they're gonna introduce, or maybe we're gonna get to see new stars emerge from this team. Sadly, though, we didn't get to see them past the group stages, now, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So now talking about one of the teams in that group, France. What a drama that was for France. Okay, so France, going back 4 years to 2006, they lost the final to Italy. And then two years after, at Euro 2008, they were knocked out in the group stage. They had Italy and the Netherlands in that same group as well. Strong teams in that group, knocked out from the group stage. For this World Cup itself, they had to go through a playoff. And that too was settled on very controversial circumstances because of Thierry Henry's handball, which wasn't picked up. And, you know, you could say justice was served in a sense that they got to the World Cup finals. There was this huge drama where they didn't want to train. And then, you know, morale was low. They sent Nicolas Anelka back first. And then that drama came and they didn't want to train. They handed the letter to the coach at the training ground. Unprofessional. But in a way, we would say, oh, maybe they were not united as a team. Actually, they were united as a team, but united against the manager. So there was some discord in that team. Tell me about this drama. What was your thoughts when it first unfolded? I mean, GJ, we'll start with you because the captain of that team was a Manchester United player, Patrice Evra.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was kind of shocking and at the same time not shocking. If you watch the qualifiers, in fact, before the knockout stages, if you watch the qualifiers, they didn't do too good, right? They were struggling. You could see the team was disjointed. They had stars. They had Anelka, they had Evra, they had who else?
Henry was captain.
Henry. Right?
That's about it, actually. Frank Ribery.
Ribery, Galas. Cisse. I mean, Cisse was a bit of an injury prone.
Yeah, Gibril Cisse, yeah. He was there.
Quality. Loris was pretty young, 23 at that time.
Yeah.
Right? Who else? That's about it, I guess.
That's about it.
Yeah, if you want to throw in the popular names in the popular teams, right? But they struggled as a team. And again, what was mentioned, the handball was the main talking point, was the biggest news about the French team. It wasn't about how they played, it wasn't about, you know, what they achieved, it's the handball.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, and we thought that maybe Raymond Devenhout could have done something to this team during the group stages, but falling and falling and falling. And with the drama that unfolded with Anelka, initially everybody thought, same old Anelka, he's just sulking.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody thought he's just sulking. But when the players got behind him, you just start to realize that this is a bigger issue. This is a team that's not ready to play. This is a team that shouldn't be here in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know? With that in mind, I have to think about what happened to, I think it was Northern Ireland, being knocked out, or
Republic of Ireland,
yeah. How would they have fared? You know, if they come, it's something to think about. What if scenario? What if Republic of Ireland had come to the World Cup?
Yeah. They might have given a better performance, I guess. More spirited. Exactly. At least more spirited, yeah.
Yeah, so this was the team that just didn't want to play.
Mm.
You know, I mean, unprofessional. They were united as a team, but what about the, you know, supporters?
Mm.
Right, might as well just not turn up if you're not going to play. If you're not going to give your all. You know?
Mm.
what about your nation? I mean, the pride of your, you're wearing that club, your
country.
Flag on your chest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where's that patriotism, you know? I mean, we can say what we want to over here, but we never know what the real deal happened in the camp. You see.
Yeah.
In my opinion, if you're playing for the flag, if you're playing for your country, you don't care about everything else. You just go out and do your best, you know, regardless of who. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Steven, would you say 2006 was an end of the era for France?
Well, I think the years between 2006 and 2012 was a transition period for French football. Yeah. I think they were bidding goodbye to the class of 98 and several other players that were part of the 2006 squad. So it was kind of a transition period. But at the same time, it's obvious that Raymond Domenech, the French coach, I think after Euro 2008, he should have been removed from his job.
Yeah.
I don't think that he was fit enough. I mean, I don't think he was good enough to coach the French national team anymore. And bear in mind, you know, France came to this World Cup having dropped players like Karim Benzema, Sami Nasser, who were considered at the time. I mean, obviously, at that time, these players were considered among the best talent of French football. And yet, he dropped them.
They were young. They were young, but still very talented.
And the weird thing about Raymond Domenech, I think he sort of like, if I'm not mistaken, there was some weird thing about him is that he announced a squad on national primetime television at the same time proposing to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Obviously, this is not a guy that you should be entrusting to take care of your national team's affair. I think obviously he was by then out of his depth, but I think it's a big lesson for French football overall, because in the years after this World Cup, I mean, it's obvious to see what they have accomplished since then.
Mm. Okay, Lokman, yourself, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I must say that there are two shocking moments in 2010, and one of them is the French loss
to the host.
Yeah, and what baffled me was even when they were losing, they had that fine spirit in them. That's what I vaguely remember.
They're just going through emotions.
Yeah. When the only thing I can remember from France around that time period was thankfully VAR wasn't around back in the day. Otherwise they probably wouldn't have made it to the World Cup either way.
Yeah.
They didn't deserve to be in the World Cup.
Mm. And any team that disappointed you in this World Cup?
If I were to pinpoint specific teams, I would probably go with that's a tough one actually. Mm. But I would go with the French national team takes the cake for that.
Okay.
they're beyond disappointing.
All right. You guys, DJ and Steven, you got any team that
I think overall I think I was kind of expecting, you know, a World Cup being held in Africa, there would have been a strong showing from African representative, but surprisingly, you know, only Ghana made it far, and other teams like Ivory Coast or Cameroon in Nigeria, who had pretty good talent, I mean, they had a very strong depth in their team, but yet none of them made it out of the group stage. So I think overall it was a disappointing World Cup for Africa. That's my view.
Okay. Yeah, for African teams, I believe so. Because, like what Steven said, Nigeria had the pedigree. Since 94, they've been a constant showing, you know. They've been a strong team. Then up-and-comers, I wouldn't say up-and-comers, but a team that has been producing a lot of talent in the European leagues, Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest name, Drogba, right?
Yeah.
In fact,
the Torre brothers as well.
The Torre brothers. In fact, I think another controversy regarding this was, I believe there was the Ivory Coast team had their bus shot at or something before the tournament. Something along the line.
They had their bus what again?
Shot at. There was
I think that's the African Cup of Nations, whereby
Togo.
It happened in Angola.
I'm sorry. I got it mixed up. Ivory Coast, like what Steven said, was one of those teams with full of talents, and you'd expect them to get to at least the, I would say, maybe round of 16, at least out of the group, you know. But only Ghana. And Ghana put up a pretty good fight, actually. They did. I mean, you talk about African pride, Ghana was Africa's pride that year.
Yeah, true. I would point out Italy, my team, to be another team that disappointed. But as I've explained, actually, at the end of the 2006 episode...
Sorry to interrupt you, bro, because Italy hardly shows their presence in the World Cup. Forgot about them.
Wasn't this the year that Italy was held to a 1-1 draw with New Zealand?
Yes.
Yeah. They were in a group with Paraguay, New Zealand, and Slovakia. So they, on paper, you should beat these teams. You should at least get into the knockout stages, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. They finished bottom of the group. They lost to Slovakia. And this was also the time where, I mean, this probably you'd say the continuation of the European World Champions curse, where World Champions get knocked out in the group stages of the following World Cup edition. So Italy carried on what France did in 2002, and they got knocked out in the group stage. But I mean, I was mentioning this in the 2006 episode as well at the end. The 2006 Italy squad was the last in terms of a generation of talented Italian players. After that, the conveyor belt stopped, and then, you know, the squad, you look at the squad that Italy had a lot of players that were probably over the hill as well, not what they used to be.
Buffon.
Yeah. Buffon actually missed the entire tournament through injury. He was in the squad, but he missed the entire tournament through injury.
He wasn't the one in the penalty shootout.
Yeah, he wasn't in goal. It was Sirigu, Marchetti.
Marchetti, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Marchetti was in goal. And so, big disappointment because Italy never really like refreshed themselves. And probably it's felt until today where, you know, Italy still is struggling in some ways, even though there's some talent, but it's still struggling like people like GJ and Steven will remember Italy producing talent after talent in the 90s, you know, the 90s, early 2000s as well. Italy had so much talent, but then now, not at that level anymore. So
the mid average players in the Italian teams in that 90s, 2000 era, even those average players were actually pretty good enough to walk into any other team. That's how good they were.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And also, if you look at the 2010 squad for Italy, I think apart from Bonucci, all the other young players, where are they now? You know, where were they after that?
Yeah, correct. No, there are not many young players, actually. Look at the numbers. A lot in their 30s, late 20s. Yeah. A lot of late bloomers that came through. And that epitomized Italy because they relied a lot on, late bloomers, players that were functional for the tactical system. So that's why sometimes in some tournaments, they would do well. But in others, they might not do as well. So, yeah. De Rossi was probably... one of the young ones that was in the 2006 squad, still young enough to be in this squad in 2010 and do well as well. So, yeah, that's it. Yeah, and also, the other point I got to make is 2010 saw an Italian club win the treble, Inter. They won the treble. They were European champions. But in that Inter squad, the Italian players were big part players. So, yeah, like Mario Balotelli was one rising talent at that point of time. But because of his attitude, you know, so he had fallen out with Mourinho a bit, couldn't play. So obviously he was not in the squad because of his attitude issues. So there you have it. So that was
pick. You can't blame him also because Mourinho tends to be a bit of an abrasive coach as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
In that, there was hardly any Inter players in the Italian squad.
Yeah, correct.
No
correct.
Inter Milan players in the Italian squad.
No, none, zero. Yeah, because like Materazzi was also a big part player. He was in the squad. Toldo was coming to the end of his career. Yeah, the other guy, young guy, was Davide Santon. He was injury prone. And then Balotelli, as I mentioned. So that's about it. So yeah, moving on now to the performance of Asian teams. They did surprisingly well.
Oh, chef's kiss. This was AFC.
Let's go, Lukman. Talk about the Asian teams. Japan and Korea. I must say this.
Mm.
Especially Korea managed to go into the second round without controversy, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
What I can remember best from that World Cup was Keisuke Honda's free kick. It was just up class.
Yeah.
It's. In fact, they even up till the very end, they actually put out quite a fight and they shocked the world.
Correct. Yeah, because Japan, especially, had a really good showing. They won two of their group stage matches, lost one, finished behind the Netherlands. South Korea, on the other hand, won one, draw one, lost one. Went the second in their group behind Argentina. So, not bad. Good showing. And as you mentioned about Japan, they lost to Paraguay only on penalty shootout.
Yeah.
Very, very, you know, of course, penalty shootouts, everyone says lottery, right?
It is.
Could have gone either way.
The match against Denmark, not only Honda scored a brilliant free kick, but even Yasuhito Endo. And if you guys remember, during that World Cup, there was a lot of issue with regards to the Jabulani, the ball. Something was too light, it was too airy, it just cannot control and all that all. And a lot of the top players were kind of struggling to put the ball in the net with that ball. But the Japanese players made it look so easy with that ball against Japan.
They had fantastic control. I mean, if you watch the Japanese team play in that that World Cup, right, it's as if they owned the ball, if they made the ball.
And the interesting thing about their coach, Takeshi Okada, after that game, he actually believed that Japan can actually win the World Cup. And I applaud him for that. I applaud him for having to say that because it shows that how much he believes and trusts in his players. And this was this was the guy that was actually coaching Japan in their first World Cup in 98.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting fact. I didn't know that. Okay. But, I mean, it would have been fantastic if they had gone to maybe quarterfinals.
Yeah.
You know, not meant to be. South Korea did quite well as well. You guys want to speak about South Korea? No?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to speak about South Korea?
I'm trying to recall.
South Korea, honestly, in a group with Argentina, Greece. Yeah.
Siva don't know that well, right?
Well, Siva, who do you support?
Argentina. He's a big Argentina fan.
Well, I mean, South Korea did amazingly well. I mean, again, like we were mentioning about the African teams, Nigeria. Everybody expected this group to be Argentina's and Nigeria's. It was Nigeria for sure. But the way South Korea just came about, I mean, they didn't blow everyone away. Yeah, they beat Greece. That's the important thing. They beat Greece. Yeah. And I think Greece, were they already the European champions?
No, no longer. They were.
So this was Greece was, I felt the worst European champions.
Yeah.
But still, you know, pedigree. A lot of pedigree in their team. So South Korea to beat them 2-0, then just after that they lost 4-1 to Argentina. Unfortunately. But and then they went on to hold Nigeria. So a draw, a win in that group, a draw and a win is just, I believe they're punching above their weight already, you know. Mm-hmm. How many players do you know in that team? Here's the thing.
Park Ji-sung.
Park Ji-sung,
he was in that squad,
Yeah, other than that, could you name
him? An Jung-hwa was still in the team.
Lee Won-jae was still in the team, yeah.
Yeah, there's a player called Lee Dong-guk. And Cha Do-ri was there as well. Yeah.
Lee Yong-pyo was there.
Lee Yong-pyo, yes. Quite a few household names.
household names, but again, they weren't expected to do much. Right? Yeah. They weren't expected to do much. And yet, here they were second in the group. That is a big surprise. I was really behind South Korea, actually. Part from because of Park Ji-sol. I like Park Ji-sol. I was behind them. I was hoping that they would go on to be go on a little further in the group stage. I mean, the knockout stages. Unfortunately, Uruguay, you know.
Yeah, beat them, yeah.
That's the magic of the World Cup, isn't it?
Anyone
can beat anyone.
Yeah, true.
On the perfect, in the perfect setting, with the perfect team formation against the perfect team, any team could beat anyone, you know. South Korea could beat Brazil. Oh.
Yeah, that's certainly possible.
Or Japan could beat Germany. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
That's more than possible.
Yeah.
Correct. And who would you say were the surprise of the tournament?
Uruguay.
All things considered. Uruguay, okay.
Uruguay. Hands down, Uruguay. And actually, not just the team, but as a player, Diego Forlan was...
Oh, yeah.
Ball... Golden ball winner. Yeah. Was like... And he... I think he scored like 5 goals. Did he score 5?
Yeah. 5 or 6 he did score, yeah.
Yeah, 5. Somewhere around there. So, and he made it to the Dream Team, you know, which was the online... the public... First time ever the public got to vote for a Dream Team, the World Cup. He made it to that team. You know, he didn't make it to the All-Star team by FIFA, which is not surprising.
Okay.
That's another conversation. But, you know, the people's choice, you know. Everybody was, you know, gave him his props and he did. He did so well. He, apart from Suarez, who... used his hands to drag the team.
On that Suarez thing also, I got to say, okay, you see, he handled the ball, the referee gave a penalty, sent him off, the right thing to do, but Asamoah Gyan missed the penalty. So, it's just unlucky, you know.
It was a controversy because he blatantly handled the ball. That was the controversy. Otherwise, And plus, it's Diego. I mean, it's Luis Suarez. That's why it's a controversy. Otherwise, yes, you're right. In fact, I didn't find anything wrong with it. He handled the ball. He got sent off. It's not like he stayed on the pitch. It's not like he stayed on the pitch and saved the ball again. You know.
Yeah. Correct. If Asamoah Gyan had scored that penalty, then Ghana would have gone to the semifinals, and that's it. You know, probably you say justice was served, but you know, he missed the penalty. Unfortunate. You know, maybe he lost his cool, he lost his focus, whatever. You know, it comes to missing penalties. Far greater players have missed penalties in the World Cup.
So, that's true. But when you add on the weight of the entire nation on your shoulders, the pressure is just huge. Quantified.
Yeah,
I remember watching that match. Yes, it's justifiable that he walked off, but if he hadn't had stopped that and got sent off to begin with, they would have considered a goal.
Yeah, they would have.
Penalty, it's a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
I rather get that lottery ticket and take one from team than, you know, I'm trying to think from Suarez's perspective and it kind of paid dividends.
Okay, who you got as your surprise team?
I think 9 out of 10 players, even if you or me were on the pitch, even if you're not professionals, we would have done that. We would have put our hands up
and try to start. For the team.
One for the team.
I think like for myself who followed South American football quite long enough, I'm not surprised to see what unfolded in that game because it's in Uruguay's DNA. They have this belief called, you know, the Gara, which is, you know, the idea to win at all costs. Mm. So when Suarez got himself sent off and when he celebrated at the side of the field when Asamoah Gyan missed the penalty, I know the whole world felt in disgust about it. But to me, it wasn't really anything bad because it's understandable. Yeah. This is the Uruguay's mentality. This is what they're all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they will not give an inch. They basically will try to every inch possible to win the game. They will go for it. And believe it or not, that when the World Cup, this current World Cup draw was made, there was a real hoo-ha in Ghana, knowing the fact that they are going to meet again in the World Cup. For Ghanaians, they are looking forward to this game in blood and guts. They couldn't care less, even if their team can lose any other game, but this is the game they're really, really looking forward to win. So if
that is in this year's World Cup, right?
Yes. Yeah. So and Luis Suarez is still in the team. Still part of the squad.
Anybody wants to bet on a penalty being given to Ghana?
So this is one game. I think if you're gonna pick a game to look forward to in this World Cup, this is it.
This is it. It's going to be
a heated affair. But yeah, I have to agree with you. But I have to add in something. It's not just Uruguay, but it's a South American DNA that they do anything to win. You've seen it in Brazil. You've seen Brazilian teams do it. You've seen Argentinian teams do it. Paraguay do it. Colombia do it. You know, everybody. So it's
speaking of surprise, I would pick Paraguay as a surprise. The fact that they made it to the quarterfinal. I mean, that's a surprising team.
Okay.
And don't forget, New Zealand came to this World Cup with, I think, very little hope, but ended up being the only unbeaten team in the World Cup.
Actually, I was about to pick New Zealand as my surprise team.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they are probably one of the lower seeded teams in this World Cup, and yet they're the only unbeaten team.
Yep. They did well. I agree with you. New Zealand got to be one of the surprises. Ghana, South Korea, Japan, we've already mentioned these teams were surprises as well. What about your team, Hakim? This is your time to shine now. Tell us about your team.
Well, my team doesn't even call it football.
Yeah, so?
Yeah,
which team is that? The question is.
The United
this is
States
the trivia question.
The USA.
actually, Hakim, before you go further, if you guys realize, apart from England or apart from the UK, most of the other English-speaking nation in the world, they don't call it football. I don't know whether you realize this or not.
And actually, soccer is a British term.
ironically, it's been introduced by the English, but they're not really going to have that. But yeah, the USA. Well,
tell us about USA.
Despite my reasons, the way they handle they build their soccer up in the country, they build their interests, and has paid dividends in this World Cup and it shows. And imagine having a no professional league when you hosted the World Cup 1984 to having one of the most followed and most viewed leagues right now in the world within the span of probably one generation, even less than that, even. The amount of effort they put into their game over there is very commendable. And I grew to admire that, how they build themselves up. And slowly or surely, I became a fan of the national team.
And about their performance in this World Cup, they finished top of the group ahead of England.
Exactly. Well, I remember I was in London. If not wrong, I was in London or so. I know I read The Sun somewhere. And after the draw, one of the tabloids, I think it was The Sun. They spelled out the acronym easy. England, Algeria, Slovenia, and Yanks.
Okay, at the bottom.
They were that cocky. Only for Robert Green to fumble and drop 2 points for England. And we shed the point. Then from there, we went on to draw again against Slovenia. And the last game against Algeria, that was a nil by there. I remember celebrating like no tomorrow when Landon Donovan scored that last minute that last attack that from off a assist from Tim Howard, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, it was a long ball from Howard.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, it was a beautiful counter. Yes. And had London Donovan had not scored that goal, the US would have advanced it to begin with.
It was a typically British goal against the English.
Yeah, typically British goal, yeah, against Algeria.
Yeah. Yes. It's,
and also it's London Donovan.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's
not London Donovan.
Right.
Yeah, but, well, for that match, you would have been London Donovan.
He was watching the game from London, don't forget that.
Yeah.
Well, London Donovan has been... This was a squad with names like Clint Dempsey, London Donovan, Tim Howard, who were at their peaks of their career at that point of time. And it was a very exciting US team to watch. And it was the first time that I truly followed the US national team at a World Cup tournament. And ever since then, I've been hooked. After the antics in this World Cup, I was hooked to the national team. And that is why I'm going to fly over to Qatar this year in a few weeks to watch and support them for the very first time.
Wow.
The Star Spangled Banner.
Props to you, man. Props to you.
You got knocked out by Ghana, right? USA? In the...
Yeah. We got revenge 4 years afterwards, so it's fine. That was good.
Just a quick note about United States. Don't forget, Tim Howard, of all people, he's 31 and he has two reds.
Yes.
So, you know, big up to him, really, for showing that it could be differently. I mean, yeah, his two red syndrome was kept under control, medication, but I think he's the first person in the world with two reds to make it in a World Cup.
Only to outperform his performance in the World Cup after that.
It's insane. The man is, I don't know, maybe the two reds makes him play better.
Yeah. Right now there's a major headache as to who goes between the posts. For the US in the World Cup, it's either Metten or Zach Steffen, but either way, they have very, very huge shoes to fill or gloves.
Yeah,
in the
gloves. Howard is a giant of a shadow, in that goal post, you know.
Yeah, but America always had good goalkeepers, yeah. Brett Friedel before that, Casey Keller, Tony Miola,
Guzan.
Who?
This is surprising. Who's quite a few of them actually trained in American football, you know. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
They played American football, actually.
Yeah. Okay, Steven, now is your team. Tell us about your beloved Argentina with Diego Maradona as manager. It was fairy tale, right, at the start.
Maradona should not even been there, bro. Should not even been for the job.
I got to ask you. Honestly, I know Maradona means a lot to Argentinian fans, to you as well. But in this World Cup, as manager, was he more of a hype man than a manager?
That's the whole idea. He was there in the first place. I mean, I remember when he got the job, the first question a friend of mine asked me is that, what do you think is going to happen? I said, to be honest, it can go between a glorious victory to an ultimate disaster.
Yes.
And at the point of time when Maradona got the job, the whole idea was because of his status. The AFA at the time was trying to, you know, try to milk money out of it, you know, build some commercial revenue out of it.
Okay.
And I think they understood that Maradona, when it comes to tactically, he was out of his depth. But what they did was they also brought in Carlos Bilardo, who was the 1986 World Cup team manager, to be his assistant, to guide him on the tactical aspect of the team. But unfortunately, somewhere along the line, relationship between these two broken down and Bilardo was not allowed to have any say or any role in the team. And it was all Maradona on his own. And it was obvious that with the players at his disposal. I mean, obviously, you can, when it comes to teams like South Korea, Greece, Nigeria, with all due respect, you can. I mean, somehow or other, with the talent that is available, you can always overrun them, and including Mexico. Hakim is smiling there, no? But, you know, when you come across a team, I mean, when the quarterfinal came against Germany, I did kind of knew that this was it, because you a solid German team. I mean, after what they've shown against, after what they have performed against England in the earlier round, it was obvious something's going to happen. Something similarly was going to happen. And if you notice that in that World Cup team, players like Javier Zanetti, Esteban Cambiaso, who just coming from a treble winning season with Inter, were not,
they
even,
were not
in, the
even in the squad.
They were not in the squad. Diego Milito wasn't even... As I understand, there were some issues between them and Maradona. I mean, what extent, I have no idea. And then Milito wasn't even... Was just a bit part player.
Yeah.
So, obviously...
But to be fair, you had like Tevez. Higuain also was on form. Tevez was there. Messi was there.
I mean, you have all the names. You have all the names, yes. Aguero, but you still... You have all the names, but you still needed to have a functioning team to win. That wasn't the case with Argentina in 2010. It was a team that was capable to overrun against weaker opponent. But when you meet someone on your same level, well tactically equipped, you know, well refined, it's really going to be a nightmare. And that's what happened against Germany. And don't forget, you know, Germany, they had a coach who knew where to put his finger to get magic out of it, if you know what I mean. So yeah, but unfortunately, it wasn't a glorious victory. Fortunately, it wasn't an ultimate disaster. It was just somewhere in between. We just came up short. And, you know, and I knew this was it for Maradona with the national team, because after the World Cup, as how the FA always does, if you all know, the president of the Argentina Football Association at the time is a mafiosi named Julio Grondona. Someone who is very influential in FIFA. Someone who is a Sepp Blatter, so-called right-hand man. If you think Sepp Blatter is
dirty
enough, you haven't seen this guy. He's the reason what makes Sepp Blatter so dirty. He gets all the job done for him. So, yeah.
Okay. Henchman.
Yep. But the thing is, let's be frank. I mean, like what you say, there wasn't a more animated character on the sideline than Maradona during the entire World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, which coach is going to juggle the ball like him? Nobody. Yeah. So for the entertainment, yes. I mean, for the entertainment, you know, I would give credit to Argentina, but you know, that's not what we want. We wanted to win the World Cup.
Mm. Okay.
I personally, I want to add on to Steven's point. I personally feel that the Maradona's Argentinian side feels more experimental more than anything, actually. It's definitely, I think it's more like a prelude. What we saw is more like a prelude for the squad that we saw in the Brazilian World Cup. The squad is, the composition is about, how different are the composition of the 2010 Argentine squad, the 2014 Argentine squad? How different are they?
Most of the 20-somethings were actually in that squad already.
Most of them were there. Yeah. But the difference is in 2014, we had a coach. We had a coach that knew how to get the best out of the players, tactically.
Would you say that he's just taking the squad that's being left out of... Taking Maradona's squad and fine-tuning and refining them to their best of their abilities.
I will agree with that.
Because it does feel that way, actually. Yes, it may not be perfect, but like I've said, it feels more experimental than more than anything, actually.
It felt like a mix between Maradona's preference and also his right-hand man. I forgot his name.
Carlos Bilardo.
Bilardo, yeah. So, I felt it was like it's an input by both of them. You know, you had Maradona's favorites. I mean, honestly, what was Varon doing there? He was 35 already.
Yeah. And he fell out with Maradona after that World Cup, right?
Yeah, he fell out with Maradona. But the first reason the reason he was there in the first place was because he was on good terms with him. you know, and Maradona was an admirer. But here's my question, though. I mean, or rather, here's my scenario in the sense that I would love to be a fly on the wall in that Argentinian dressing room when Maradona tries to stamp his authority and say, you all should come back early and not party and make sure you don't do drugs. And then the players start looking at each other and go, really?
Look who's talking.
Yeah, exactly. Don't you think that would have been... See, who would take him seriously? I doubt the players. Maybe the younger players, you know, like Di Maria and Messi, and maybe to a certain extent, Chavez, the ones who look up to him, you know, as a legend, you know, they might have, might have taken him seriously. But how about the ones who are in their 30s, you know, like, really, the ones who played with him in previous World Cup?
Yeah.
You know, after what you've done?
It's more of a case of do as I say, don't do what I do.
yes, that's nice. Yeah, correct. Yep.
All right.
So moving on from Argentina, Germany, what a journey they had, right, to the semifinals again. So 2006, they reached the semifinals, got finished third in that World Cup, finished third again in this World Cup. What do you make about Germany's journey to this in this World Cup? I'd say, DJ.
Germany were, apart from that, I would say, glitch. Well, actually, it wasn't a glitch. I felt that Germany were kind of lucky, really lucky. If you look at it, they thrashed Australia opening day. And, you know, everybody's like, yeah, that's the German team. And then suddenly when Serbia came along, they were like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah, they lost, yeah.
No, they lost, yeah. Yeah. It's like, what happened here, you know? And it, even though it's a 1-0 loss, again, the beauty of the World Cup, you know, you see a minnow like Serbia beating a giant like Germany. And then Ghana came along and put up such a fight. You know, this German team was just... It was just confusing to watch at times. You know, you wanted to be awed by them because of the team that they had.
Ghana?
Yeah,
this is the year where both the Boateng brothers were playing on the opposite side.
Yeah, correct.
Was it exactly
the opposite side? Yeah, so that was of course the big news in the papers and all that. But again, like you had a team of Manuel Neuer, you know, best in striker in his prime. Sami Khedira, Mesut Ozil, Lucas Podolski,
Thomas Müller.
Miroslav
Klose.
Miroslav Klose, yeah. And you had all these players who were amazing players. It was just them stepping on the pitch would scare the opposing team. And Serbia beat them 1-0. And Ghana held them to a 1-0. You know, they lost, but they still held them. Ghana, who's Ghana? Right?
Bear in mind, so when Germany came to this World Cup, Mesut Ozil only had 10 caps. Neuer had 5, yeah. Toni Kroos had 4, Jerome Boateng had 5. They were practically
young,
a very newly refreshed team that debuted in the World Cup.
Yeah.
With hardly that many of them were actually involved during the qualifier. So it was kind of a very surprise group of players that turned up at South Africa.
Mm. Yeah. But I think the knockout stages when they thrashed England and then Argentina, I think made everyone take notice of them. You know, I think that was really impressive. You have to say that was impressive.
I mean, impressive, but also a bit of controversy there. You know, thanks to the shot that hit the crossbar and crossed the goal line. Yeah, and Neuer caught it. And then again, you know, if there's VAR there, who knows, right? Might have been just a little bit of the extra win that England might have needed to draw, maybe. In fact, if I'm not wrong, this was the one incident, one of the incidents that prompted England to push for VAR. Where, in fact, if I'm not wrong.
And goal line technology, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, goal line technology. Well,
that came first before VAR.
Yeah.
So it started with goal line and then VAR. Yes, correct.
Yeah.
So, in fact, this was one of the reasons, and England, understandably, were the biggest proponents for it. You know, it's not the first time, right?
Mm. Okay. Steven, you spoke a bit about the spirit of the Uruguayans. Hakim, I want you to come in on this as well.
Sure thing.
Tell us about Uruguay's journey to the semi-final. DJ already mentioned they're the surprise for him. But Steven, I think you know them better. Mm-hmm. Not much of a surprise for you, correct? Getting here? Or it is?
No, not really much of a surprise. I mean, this Uruguay team had plenty of game winners, if I put it that way. I mean, you look at the players like, obviously, Diego Forlán, Luis Suarez was there, Edison Cavani was there, and a certain Diego Godin was there, even though at that time he was, you could say, he's a bit unknown because he was still in Villarreal, hasn't moved to Atletico.
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, you know, it's Uruguay. Uruguay, they don't really come with fancy names, but they have a very strong, cohesive team and the one that plays together and plays for each other. Mm. Under a very strong and influential coach by the name of Oscar Tabárez, the same coach that you probably would have seen in the next few World Cups, he was around at that time. Yeah. One of the few coaches that long served in international football. So their journey wasn't really surprising at all. Perhaps maybe a bit unlucky against the Netherlands. Maybe they could have made it to the final, and who knows, you know, how much of that Uruguayan spirit would have taken them. But kudos to them, because this World Cup set the stage for them to win the following year Copa America, which is a good reward for this generation of football players, Uruguayan football players.
I thought their attack was really exciting. This Uruguayan team's attack was exciting.
It was. Adding on to Steven's point, how many of us can, let's be brutally honest with ourselves for a moment, how many of us would have thought of Diego Forlán before the World Cup?
Unless you're Manchester United fan, otherwise.
But also, I mean, after he left Manchester United, he did quite well at Villarreal.
He did fantastic. He did fantastic.
Like a different player. Yeah, it was a different player. Completely different.
He won the Europa League with Atletico.
Definitely. But he was definitely underrated nonetheless prior to the World Cup. And a lot of surprises, be it good or bad. I believe the 2010 World Cup was the World Cup for Uruguay that propelled them to the level where they are right now. Prior to 2010, will we dare say that the big teams in Europe will be looking to buying Uruguayan players?
Not really. Before that, I think before this generation, I could only remember probably Alvaro Recoba was a big player. And then before that you had Enzo Francescoli, you had Ruben Sosa, Daniel Fonseca. I mean, these names might be alien to you, Lokman, but the rest of us will remember.
Yeah, don't forget Walter Pandiani.
Who?
Walter Pandiani.
Walter Pandiani as well.
Marcelo Zalaeta, Nicolas Oliveira. They've always produced
talent,
top quality players. They always had talent. Remember, this is a country of 3.5 million people only. But yet, they
won the World Cup twice.
Per capita of producing top players is among the highest in the world, alongside Croatia.
I think that was that team, that Uruguay team also was, there were a lot of young players and a lot of them were elevated at that level. Like Cavani was 23 playing for, I think, in the Serie A.
Palermo.
And then don't forget, Suarez was playing for Ajax at that time before Liverpool bought him.
Ajax.
Forlán was really 31, so it was at Atletico Madrid. But he had, who else was there? Ignacio Gonzalez. He was
Diego Godin was there.
Godin,
Caceres.
Muslera. Yeah.
Don't forget Sebastian Abreu. El Loco was there.
So
he was already 33.
Yeah, 33, but they were all elevated at that time. because of their performance here. In fact, I believe it's this World Cup that kind of got them out of the smaller teams, the bigger teams, especially for Suarez. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so from the semi-finalists, let's talk about the finalists, the journey to the final. GJ, your Holland friend, talk to us about Holland's journey to the final.
What do I say? Holland were, I would say...
Holland was my pick. Let me tell you, after Italy got knocked out, Holland was my pick. I wanted Holland to win.
Same here, same.
Holland were playing really, I wouldn't say entertaining football, but they were playing effective football. It was a very
collective effort.
I mean, it's almost total football, but not total football, you know, to that extent. Mm-hmm. And you see all
your Johan Cruyff's vision.
Not Johan Cruyff's vision. They didn't draw. They didn't draw at all. They didn't draw. They didn't lose. They just won. And the only time they lost was to Spain.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a fantastic record. And that too
was like extra time. So over 90 time. Minutes, so they didn't lose.
They never lost the game in 90 minutes. It's after extra time. Yeah. And they considered something like, 6 goals in, 7 games?
Mm.
They averaged that out. You know, so they were playing very effective football. No matter what happens, whatever team scores against us, we're going to score more. And we'll keep the ball. And they contained the ball so well. It wasn't until maybe Brazil where things started to get like
dicey.
Heated up. Spicy. It's like the quarterfinals where suddenly everybody went crazy and started like, yeah, we're going to get yellow cards as well. We're going to show the world that we can get violent as well. They started going crazy against Brazil. Uruguay, not so much. In Spain, my God, that was a fight. That was crazy. I think one of the most violent World Cup finals. How many cards was that? It was like 11 yellow cards, something like that.
Probably up there with the 1990 World Cup final.
I can't forget Dijon's high boot.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one I was thinking about. Dijon's Kung Fu.
I don't even know. I don't think it was. Did he get sent off for that? No,
he didn't get sent off at all.
That's the controversial thing.
That's the thing. Yeah. It was so clear. Everybody saw it. How did the referee see it? I think the referee was in a good position to see it as well.
Mm. It was Howard Webb from England.
Yeah, Webb.
Oh, that explains this. Howard Webb. Yeah.
Yeah.
Webb. So, yeah, but I mean, he was right in front of him, I think, or something off the line. But I mean, look at it. He was off the ground, 1 foot off the ground. The other one was high.
Yeah.
How did he not get sent off? Yeah, but that was insane, though. Yeah.
I would say probably their performance in the final was disappointing. I expected more from Holland in the sense that, you know, probably containment of the ball, attacks and all, but they had one good chance. Aaron Robben missed that.
Yeah.
If they had gone in, well, probably, you know, we'll be talking about Holland as world champions today.
But finally,
you mentioned a name called Johan. You mentioned Johan Cruyff.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you know, he wasn't really a fan of this Dutch team. He didn't quite like the way they played.
Yeah.
And the reason why Johan Cruyff is a very important figure in this final because you had a country where he used to represent.
Yeah,
against a country that plays the kind of football that is modeled after his vision.
So he was
more, in fact, he admitted that he never supported the Dutch national team in this World Cup. He was more of a Spain fan, which can get quite a few people in Holland, but understandably, because he came from the school of thought that it's not about the result, it's about how you play the game. A total opposite than what we spoke about Uruguay earlier. You know, when it comes to the Netherlands, you know, they still... Even though they won Euro 1988, the one that GJ was mentioning, you know, where the only time they won something. But somehow or other, you know, it always goes back to the team from the 70s.
Yeah.
Gets a lot of the attention because of how they played the game, how they treated the ball.
And it's not only that, but the Dutch team, this was the only Dutch team I can remember that didn't have backroom, you know,
drama.
Every tournament there was, you know, somebody not liking somebody else, there'd be racism, there'd be favoritism, there'd be nepotism, something that would, you know, pop up and the team would be disappointed and everybody would be fighting and looking at the players not wanting to pass to one another.
I think France decided to play their role in this World Cup.
Yeah, when it happened to France, I was like, oh, wow, okay, so what about the Dutch?
Okay.
Yeah, but this was a team that coexisted really well, you know.
Yeah.
And they played effective football. Not always exciting, but effective football. And they made it all the way to the finals.
Yeah. Albeit Wesley Sneijder was their star.
Yeah, Wesley Sneijder was insane, incredible. But I mean, to reiterate what I said, I still feel this is one of the most exciting World Cups. It's just that the final was more of a fight than a match.
Well, you're already in the finals. You don't have to worry about suspensions no more. Just go all out.
Yeah, I mean, true, but then you still have to win first. I don't mind if you lost the guy after scoring 3 goals and then you go out and go crazy. That's fine, you know.
Okay. The other finalists now, Spain. We've not spoken at all throughout the show about Spain, but this was the Spanish era, Spanish golden era. You know, I think we like the older ones of us, we will remember Spain to be this team that, you know, always overpromised and underdelivered. They always had good talent, but they always, when it comes to the finals, whether it's Euros or the World Cup, they always disappointed. Mm. And personally, for me, I felt at this point in time, I mean, everyone was just so Spain. And then it's like, the hype was getting too much for me. So that's why I went for Holland. The other reason is also because not only Spain, Barcelona as well. And Barcelona's playing style and the Spanish playing style, they're mirrored. And a lot of players are similar players. Players that play for Barcelona.
Exactly.
Yeah, play for Spain. Yeah. And there's also one more Liverpool connection between Spain and Liverpool. So, of course, I'm a Manchester United fan. So, there is that rivalry, of course. Yeah.
Torres,
Xavi Alonso.
But
Rafa Benitez and all that jazz.
That team had quite a few Barcelona players. You know, Puyol, Iniesta.
But yeah, I mean, give credit where it's due. I think they play really well. Were fantastic in the way they played, but interestingly enough, they are one of the lowest scoring world champions.
Yeah, what shocked me was the fact that they lost their opening game of all teams to lose to Switzerland.
Yeah, that's what the Swiss do to you, man. I know it.
That's true, but the way they rebounded after that, it's admirable. I mean, they're fresh off the heels of their, I think, Euro
2008,
victory. Yeah, Euro victory, and everyone was rooting for them. And at that point, we have players in their prime, young, not so young Xavi, but relatively peak Xavi.
Yeah.
Who else we have?
Iniesta.
Iniesta.
Puyol also. Puyol wasn't too young, but still, yeah.
Don't forget David Villa.
Yeah, David Villa, Torres.
Mata was just 8 caps in, you know.
Yeah, true.
Torres was 26 in his prime. Fabregas was 23. Still playing for Arsenal.
Sergio Ramos was there. Xabi Alonso. Busquets, Pedro,
Pique, Gerard,
David
Pique.
Silva,
Casillas was captain.
You have a team that's compromised of mostly Real and Barca players. How would you not poop in your pants after just hearing the starting lineup?
You also had a few from Valencia. I mean, Mata and Silva were from Valencia. Young and upcoming players, you know? But yeah, you're right. Who would not poop in their pants looking at that lineup right there?
That's a nice way of putting it. Very pleasant.
I would say this is probably the greatest ever generation of football players, because you look at the Barca and Real players, you look at the likes of Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, you know, Busquets, and of course, Abi Alonso, Sergio Ramos, Casillas, and all that. Not only they accomplished for their country, winning Euros and World Cups, but they've accomplished almost everything at club level. It's almost like this generation just suddenly came together and took over everything.
Yeah.
For a good period of six, 7 years, these two teams, especially these two clubs, I mean, they were this was like El Clasico at the peak of its, despite the rivalry was at its peak, but yet they can still come together and perform for the national team. Something was quite never happened in the past. I mean, those like myself and Russ will remember. I mean, even in the previous World Cups, there's always been Real Madrid and Barcelona players, but somehow or other, they never fulfilled what they're supposed to what they can promise. Right. But this team, this generation is something else.
And this team, if I'm not wrong, played with a false nine, right? If I'm not wrong.
No, the false nine was in Euro 2012.
They still had David Villa and Torres.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, after that, they still had strikers, but they still played with a false nine.
Yeah.
That's the funny part, you know. Usually teams with no out-and-out strikers play with a false nine. This was the precursor to the false nine, where almost like the Barcelona tiki-taka style of play, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what it was. And we didn't, maybe we didn't realize it at that time, but this was an all-conquering team.
Were they questionable Del Bosque at that time?
Yes. Vincent Del Bosque.
That was his style, isn't it? Tiki-taka?
Yeah.
No, not really. Well, he played attacking football. He was Real Madrid's manager, and he played. I mean, most Spanish managers are known to play attacking football, and he's one of them. But Tiki Taka, I think probably he's a very clever manager, I would say, Del Bosque. In the way he manages the squad and tactics, I think he just incorporated Barcelona. While Barcelona is doing well, just incorporated it, and it worked.
Because the midfield was basically Barcelona. Iniesta and Xavi were there.
And Busquets, I think.
I think the real credit should go to Luis Aragonés, because he won the Euro. And then
he broke the hoodoo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. That's true. Yeah, so that's that. Spain, Holland, in the end, Spain won the World Cup. Deserved champions? Yes, no?
No doubt about it. I mean, the best brand of football we have seen from a generation of football players doing it both for their club and country. So, you know, you can't argue with that.
But I don't think we've seen anything closer. One thing I got to say, I think, is if you compare other international countries, probably Brazil 1970 will come close.
Maybe on an international level, Brazil 1970 could be a bit, I would say, better than Spain 2010. But as a generation of football players, there's no generation of group that come close to what this Spanish group of players accomplished. Because they practically, within that space of 7 years, they practically filled up their trophy cabinets with everything they could win. Yeah.
I mean, from the 90s up to now, up to this time, you've seen a lot of golden generation. The English golden generation that won nothing. The Portuguese golden, Portuguese with Luis Figo, you know, nothing. Right? And then when you see Spain come up and you think that, oh, it's going to be another one of those all hype and nothing else. And it happened for a while. They weren't winning. And then come the Euros, they won the Euros, and suddenly it just started a whole domino effect where they're just winning and winning and winning. I can't remember when they were runners up for anything. Were they ever runners up? Or did they lose? No.
They were all the way to 2014, I think they won everything, even the Confederations Cup.
Yeah.
I think. Brazil won, right? Brazil won.
Yeah. So, but still, I mean, Confederation Cup is more of a friendly than anything else. It's not really a real international tournament to say, but still, international. You talk about the top tournaments. Spain was just blowing everybody away. Even if they didn't win, even if it was just a friendly, let's say it was a friendly, they were blowing other teams away.
Yeah.
Yeah. they were playing a brand of football that was, as Sivan was saying, Johan Cruyff would have been proud of. And it pains me to say this, but the better team won. The better team won.
It pains me to say it too, but yeah, true. Okay, guys, before we end the show, I want to know who makes your team for World Cup 11, this World Cup 2010-11. Oof. GJ, you ready? You probably the most ready one.
You mean 11? You mean you want 11 players or just one?
11 players.
Oh, wow. I'm not ready for that. Wait. I'm not ready. Maybe you can try the other guys first.
Okay. Anyone else, Ivan or Lukman, you ready?
Oh, I really got to think about that. But the goalkeeper in between the posts, because Silas is... Neuer is a lockdown.
Are you going to go with Neuer? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Up front.
Or straight up front. Nobody in defense and midfield.
No, that's the thing. If I were to go and speak about my defense and midfielders right now, they'll probably be all Spanish.
I can't do it.
But forward, I would probably put... Yeah, definitely, I will put Forlan in up front.
Okay, Forlan. How many attackers are you going to go with? Two, three?
Four, three.
4-3-3, okay. So, three attackers then. Forlan. Let me throw you some names. David Villa.
No.
Torres.
Yes. No. Torres did not perform in this one.
Closer. Yeah. Miroslav Closer.
Yeah, Closer is a good shout, yeah.
Okay. Gonzalo Higuain.
Higuain definitely is a lot, yeah.
Okay, so that's your three already. Midfield.
This is so hard.
Yeah, this one is hard. This one is hard because you got Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and you got Schweinsteiger, Ozil, Muller. Yeah,
right. I'm gonna go and drop names real quick and I want to look back.
Okay, yeah.
First one. Surprising AFC inclusion in this.
Okay.
What position was Honda by the wings?
You could say midfield, yeah. Midfield, you can.
Yeah.
He was more attacking midfielder, yeah.
Yeah, he's in.
Okay.
I need a set piece specialist either way.
Okay.
The two Barca boys, Xavi and Iniesta.
Iniesta. Okay.
And
Manuel Neuer in goal.
Huh?
Manuel Neuer in goal, right?
Manuel in goal. Now the four defenders is a tough one.
Yeah.
Puyol's in.
Okay. Puyol in center.
Puyol in center.
Pique.
No.
Ramos.
No, I'm going to have to go English, actually.
English? Okay.
Yeah.
Not American? Are you not going to choose any American players?
If I were to put Landon Donovan up front, I'll be seen as biased. but I would put... Who have put so far?
Puyol so far. Only Puyol in defense so far.
Puyol. Alright.
Philip Lam.
No.
Oh, okay.
It's really rough. It's a very talented squad back in the day, but
yeah. No Gerard Piqué as well.
No.
Piqué wasn't really
He didn't really shine through.
Yeah,
people thought he really had, but
I he made more headlines for Dancing with Shakira. He made more headlines than having a good game.
Okay, maybe Lokman, you keep that, keep the midfield, keep the defense in the balance. You think about it, Steven. Yeah. I think you are ready.
Yes, few more names.
Okay, I will. By goalkeeper, I'm going for Iker Casillas. And in right back, Maicon. Yeah. Left back, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. My centre back pairing is going to be Gerard Pique and Diego Godin.
And okay.
My midfield, I'm opting for Iniesta and Xavi. You can't go wrong with them. And Wesley Sneijder. Striker, Diego Forlan, of course, definitely. Gonzalo Higuain. And the other one I'm going to pick is David Villa. So it's a 4-3-3 formation. Yeah.
All right. GJ?
Yeah,
and
I'll go with the 4-2-3-1.
Just before you go any further, and the coach, Takeshi Okada.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll go with a 4-2-3-1. Okay. Favorite position right now. For my goalkeeper, I think Lukman would be very happy. I picked Tim Howard because I thought honestly, I'm a big fan of the man.
Okay. Yeah,
bias maybe.
Is it because it's ex-United?
Bias also. Maybe. but he had a good World Cup. I mean, come on, he had a good World Cup, you know?
Yes, he did.
Obvious choices. I mean, you don't expect them to put a foot wrong, but Howard, Sean, for me, you know. Defense, four-man defense would be Lam on the left. Puyol and Ramos, they were fantastic for Spain, so that. And a bit of Brazilian flair, Maicon. I have to go with Sivan as well. Right back was Maicon. After Cafu, Maicon was outstanding in the World Cup for Brazil.
Yeah.
Midfield, my two, and this might not work in this formation, but you have to give it to the Barcelona boys because they were outstanding. Iniesta and Xavi, definitely. My three would be Sneijder, Schweinsteiger, and Muller. Three of them. And my one striker would be Forlan. I purposely chose this formation so I don't have to admit that, so I don't have to put Suarez in.
That bitter, huh?
I don't want my opponents to have teeth marks or so, so you know.
Okay.
All right. I have three more though.
Yeah, you got pending three more.
All right. I'm gonna go. Terry,
okay. So Terry and Puyol in the center.
Delicious, doesn't it sound? Okay, then this is where my biases start to show, but we had a good captain in Carlos Bocanegra.
Okay, yeah.
Very underrated name. Yeah, I have to say, yeah. Very underrated. Yeah.
I don't think about Carlos Bocanegra. He's kind of speedy. He's very Steven Gerrard-esque, per se. And you're going to love this one, GJ. Heinze.
Heinze, okay.
Heinze. What was he? Was he in his 30s already by then? Was he?
Should be, yeah.
I think he was in late 20s in 2006. So he was
in his 30s, yeah.
Yeah, right. The difference is very hard because there are so many style, different countries bring so many different play styles to the table. And the way they, from Spain's attack to the way that, you know, the Dutch play anti-football with their defending, constant defending. That's why it's there's no show on be all. Like. This World Cup has a lot of on offer. So it did take me quite some time to really think through my selection.
Okay.
Lukman, I just got one question for you. When you say that Boca Negra was like Steven Gerrard, did you mean that he got sent off in 26 seconds when he came on?
Yeah, the commanding presence on the field, the keeper that everyone knows not to mess around with.
Okay.
I mean, Gerrard might be Liverpool player, but yeah, respect to him. One of the best players who never win the league.
I'll just name my alternate 11 if it's possible. So I'm going with Muslera in goal from Uruguay. John Painsil at right back from Ghana. Center back's a bit tough. I go with Lugano again, Uruguay. But partnering him, I couldn't think of many that I. Maybe Walter Samuel with Lugano, so all South American. Left back, Juan Capdevila from Spain. Nobody's mentioned him at all. He's had a good tournament. He made it in a team as well. In the all-star team. Midfield three. You've all chosen Snyder. I wanted Snyder, but yeah. Busquets. Nobody's mentioned him. Think Busquets had a good tournament.
I mean, definitely outshone by the other Spanish
midfielder. Yeah, but I mean, he's always going to be one of those players where you don't really pay too much attention to, but it's really a vital cog in that team. Kevin Prince Boateng, I think good tournament too from him. And I'll go with Ozil since Schweinsteiger has been selected before. So I think Ozil. Up front, Asamoah Gyan. Javier Hernandez had a good tournament. Can say it's a bit of a bias. Javier Hernandez, Asamoah Gyan.
Decent enough tournament.
Yeah, I mean, he made his name right in this tournament.
Yeah, he didn't set it on fire, but you know, did well enough.
Yeah, probably Carlos Tevez.
Oh yeah, no one has mentioned him.
Yeah, Carlos Tevez had a good tournament too.
Scored the best goal. Yeah. Scored the best goal of the tournament.
Yeah, true. That's not Maxi Rodriguez, is it?
Maxi Rodriguez 4 years earlier.
Oh, 4 years earlier. Okay. But again, same opponents.
Somewhere or other, when Argentina plays Mexico, probably one of the best goals will come out.
All the worldies come out.
I think it's just what that rivalry does to them. That South American teams, whenever they play one or another, they just want to. It's not just about winning, it's about outshining the other team as well.
Hasn't always been a Mexican and Argentinian rivalry. I'm only familiar with the rivalry that the United States share with Mexico, but aside from that, I just noticed that it gets kind of spicy when those two meet.
Well, also Argentina and Brazil.
That's a given, but it's less this pairing between Mexico and Argentina. That's kind of interesting, actually.
Let's see if they meet each other again in this World Cup. I'm sure Mexico will be like jumping at a bit. They want to beat Argentina.
I always felt that Mexico, I mean, maybe not pitch or play related, but they always had one of the best jerseys.
Yeah.
Tournament, they have one of the best jerseys. Yep. And I remember Campos in the 90s that he designed his own jersey, his own goalkeeper jersey.
And there's just something about the World Cup that gets Ochoa becoming turning into the best goalkeeper in the world. He suddenly becomes Superman.
Okay, guys. It's thanks a lot taking your time out.
We have missed one more important fact about this World Cup.
Okay.
Shout out to Paul the Octopus for predicting every result of the World Cup.
Wasn't there a parrot in Singapore, right? Was that did that?
Yeah, there was.
Was there? Okay.
Yeah, there was a parrot in Singapore that did that as well. But yeah, Paul the Octopus.
Paul the Octopus was mind-blowing. He was spot on. I think if he was a person, he would be a rich man.
Yeah. I wish I was kidding, but back in the day, there were people who were actually waiting for live streams or video streams of Paul the Octopus before heading into Singapore Pools.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I won't be surprised.
Seriously. Yeah. All right, guys. It's been a good one. Thanks again for sharing your memories and your time with me. It's me, Russ, signing out.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Steve.